be addressed. We have a million dreamers. We've got to fix that situation.
And are you concerned
our farmers,
about
our ranchers,
further,
our construction companies, our restaurants across the United States are in a labor shortage. We need to fix that with some of these arriving
immigrants. We have 10 seconds, but are you concerned about increased militarization of the border and what that could mean?
You know, certainly it's always a concern, but I also represent a great expanse of the border. I also understand that my communities want to have a little bit more policing there. I'd rather have the federal government than DPS troopers that are doing an ineffective job. National Guardsmen, nine of which have committed suicide, one of them which drowned in a river because Greg Abbott didn't give him the resources necessary to save himself. And so I'd rather do a better
there,
job.
But to
do
I
the
thank you
government.
For being with us, State Senator Roland yes. Gutierrez. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
And indeed, this is KBOO Community Radio in Portland. I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned. We just were listening to is the Bootleg Orchestra with Carry on the Fight. I believe I had that on maybe last time or two. I've had some people from the Philippine activist community on my show, which we have again today. We are going to be talking about selling out the Philippines. Of course, the son of the long reigning dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is in the United States meeting with the Biden administration as we speak, and we are going to be talking about that. So let me introduce my guests. Let me just request your apologize in advance for any mess ups that are happening. We our board operator is not here today due to a mix up. So I am both board opping and hosting this program. So likely we won't be able to have any callers calling in. I apologize in advance for that. So with that said, we've got Johnny from Migrante Portland. Good morning, Johnny.
Morning. How are you?
I'm pretty well, despite the last-minute craziness. And we've got Mac Durias with Gabriella Portland. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
You're so welcome. Let me just turn your mics on up just a little bit. And, yeah, so who was that group that I just played, the Bootleg Orchestra?
Yeah, that's a song that we play oftentimes just to kind of hype our community up. It's a really great song. You know, not much to say about it except that we really enjoy it and recommend people check out Bootleg Orchestra.
Yeah, they look pretty cool. I see them in this YouTube video photo right here. And you're also both with Bayan, which is a long time. I just found out they were actually founded on May Day, 1985, and we're just 2 days past May Day. So maybe just to sort out who these different groups are, Johnny, you want to start out? What's Migrante Portland?
So Migrante Portland is a member organization of Bayan, Oregon. We are a migrant workers organization dedicated to advancing genuine democracy for the Philippines and for Filipinos, and upholding national sovereignty for the Philippines. And yeah, you know, we just try to go out and organize amongst our Kababayan, that's just another term for country folk or country people from the Philippines. And, you know, really try to hear their issues, talk about the reasons why they left the Philippines, the reasons why they had to leave, and talk about the importance of organizing here and now and how those things are connected.
So actually, explain that a little bit. Maybe not all of our listeners are familiar with the reality that a lot of Filipinos who immigrate here from the Philippines end up actually being migrant workers here in the United States. People, you know, are familiar with a lot of people crossing, coming up north from Mexico. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in the case of the Philippines, this is actually like history that goes back to like the early 1900s when the U.S. colonized the Philippines. But the Philippines has always been a source of cheap labor for the United States. It all started with the Sakadas going to Hawaii to work as farmhands in the plantations over there. And then also more currently, I won't go through like the full history. If you would like to hear that, please come to like one of our educational discussions. But just in general, though, like the Philippines is you know, it's a underdeveloped country, and a lot of the economic policies that it has between in military agreements it has between itself and the U.S. It's they're very much dependent on the U.S. And it's kept like intentionally underdeveloped, one for cheap labor and cheap exports. So the Philippines is mostly agricultural country, and so that there's a serious lack of industry, and so that drives a lot of people from the countryside into the cities. But there's not enough jobs to absorb the local labor force. And so that leads to a lot of Filipinos trying to find work overseas, which in particular, Marcos Sr., the dictator, He brokered a deal between the Philippines and, in particular, like the U.S., but then other countries that are in like military and economic alliances with the U.S. to use the Philippines as a source for cheap labor. And so that's been going on, in particular, and this is known as the labor export policy. And that's been going on since the 70s, I think late 60s, early 70s. And why a lot of Filipinos migrate to the U.S. and other parts of the world to this day, with really significant the biggest concentration in the U.S. And then very significant concentrations in like Hong Kong and the Middle East, and in particular like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, those countries in the Middle East seem to be heavy importers and abusers, just like the United States, of immigrant labor, including from the Philippines. Actually, is that the way you pronounce your name, Mac?
Yes.
Thank you. So what is Gabriela all about?
Yeah, so Gabriela Portland is an overseas chapter of Gabriela Philippines. We are a Filipino women's organization that is fighting for the rights and welfare of Filipino women, both in the Philippines and here in the U.S. and wherever they happen to be. And particularly here in Oregon, our focus has very much been on women Filipinas in the healthcare industry, because that is where a high concentration of Filipina migrants actually work. And actually, jumping off of Johnny's point on the labor export policy, one of the ways that this manifests really concretely is that 40% of the Filipinas in the Philippines who train as nurses are actually opting to come to the U.S. to work rather than staying in the country. And that's because they can't actually make a decent living wage in the country, in the Philippines right now. And so they're having to travel to other countries, and particularly the U.S., to support their families. And they're actually not able to find work as nurses here, but rather caregivers, domestic workers, working in the healthcare industry as dietary aides and other roles, even like custodial staff, janitorial services in hospitals here. And it's really a testament to what Johnny is saying, that the current Marcos regime has a higher priority towards sending Filipinos away from the country, because they actually send a ton of money back home to their families in the form of what we call remittances. And that makes up about 10% of the gross domestic product of the Philippines.
And of course, they don't stay in the country and probably fight for their rights as much if they're all going overseas.
Yeah, exactly. People are scattered. A lot of what we see is like actually the impacts of family separation, right? So, you know, a mom or a sister or a brother coming overseas to support the rest of the family back home ends up being in a completely different time zone for most of the time, and they're not able to connect, they're not able to see their kids grow up. And even when they have kids here in the States, those kids are separated from their cousins and their family back home. Even not knowing the language and the culture of their own homeland is a big issue that we see amongst migrants here. And Gabriela, particularly, we have currently launched a campaign called the Care for Caregivers Campaign, which is a coalition of different organizations, including Gabriela Portland, who want to see the rights and welfare and dignity of caregivers in Oregon upheld. And we have seen through the investigation of the situation here in Oregon that a lot of caregivers are experiencing many different forms of exploitation in the workplace. And that exploitation is not being recognized or being taken responsibility of by the Filipino government. It's actually very much being left up to individuals to struggle to get by. And some of the things that folks are facing is wage theft. So actually having their wages being taken away, garnished off their paycheck, or even being paid as little as $50 a day for a 24-hour work period. And another thing that we're seeing is misclassification. So somebody's hired on as a cook or a caregiver, but the day-to-day of their work is actually far beyond that job description. They're being asked to clean and garden and nanny and take care of patients and all of these extra things. And there's just a lot of risks and daily wear and tear of this kind of intense caregiving work. As you may know, we have like a skyrocketing elderly population in this country that needs care. I think there's slated to be around like, I'm forgetting the statistic now. I want to say 70 million elderly in this country who need care. And it's not a job that a lot of people want to do. And so oftentimes that is something that migrant workers are funneled into. And yeah.
Yeah, I can identify to a certain extent. I take care of my 93-year-old mother, who may be listening. I doubt it, but hi, Mom, if you are. And I'm lucky and privileged in having resources and, you know, being able to live in our own home and things like that. But the stress is there. I understand the stress and, you know, a lot of the details of it, which we don't need to go into, but
yeah, and the ratio of like caregiver to patient in many of the like facilities here in Oregon is 1 to 6, 1 to 8, even 1 to 12. So imagine taking care of this many vulnerable people, and also just not being paid a decent living wage.
Right, and I'm sure being already often marginal and marginalized, a lot of those people probably tend to be the most vulnerable to the kinds of abuses and exploitation you're talking about. And we won't even go into how horrible it must have been with the pandemic, and to some extent
we can maybe circle
back to all these questions and more. The reason specifically, as I mentioned at the outset, that I got in touch with you all through your comrade Lonnie, thank you Lonnie, and is because I thought just a few days ago, oh yes, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is being welcomed back with open arms by the Biden administration. They're all buddy buddy. All the stuff in the past, all the money that is still owed to the Philippine people, hidden away by the Marcos family, has never been fully resolved. Even though there was judgments against the Marcoses, and even though the heinous crimes of the Ferdinand Marcos Sr. Regime have never been, there's never been like a peace and reconciliation commission or a truth commission into the crimes of the, in fact, even less likely now that you've got his son in office. So yeah, talk about what it means to have a Ferdinand Marcos Jr. in the United States talking to the Biden administration, and what is your community, how's your community responding?
Yeah, I think just some of the particulars around Marcos Jr.'s visit here to the U.S. There's like over $10 billion unaccounted for from the Marcos dictatorship at the time that was stolen from the Filipino people. But in particular, here in the U.S., there is like a court order, contempt order for $353 million just within the U.S. But because he's president, he's given diplomatic immunity so he can come into the U.S. and, you know, do his thing as a politician. So in particular, like he was visiting Biden these past few days to really firm up the already existing ties to the United States. And a lot of it is around really opening up the Philippines to more foreign direct investments. There's been talks about like, and they're currently in the process within the government of trying to change the constitution so they could actually open up the country to more foreign investment, and that's one of the key reasons for the Philippines being so poor, is that it's so export oriented and then import dependent. None of the wealth that is created by Filipinos actually stays within the Philippines, and it is instead shipped out to other countries in these different corporations that profit immensely off of the wealth and natural resources of the Philippines. And so really, and then there's also some discussion about like opening it up to, similar to Marcos Sr., there's talks about also opening up term limits to extend time in office. But I think the main emphasis is like on opening up the Philippines to more foreign investment. And so that was the nature of the visit these past few days, is talking about, in particular, but more foreign investment, but also like strengthening like military ties with the U.S. They recently just approved the building, or like an additional 4 bases for the U.S. to operate out of, the U.S. military to operate out of. 2 in Cagayan Valley, 1 in Isabela, and then 1 in Palawan. And these are all in response to kind of like the split in posturing, military posturing between China and the U.S. In fact, they had recently the Salaknib and the Balikatan exercises, military exercises. And these have been these have been like the biggest exercises they've had since the end of the Cold War. Over 17,000 troops were present, mostly from the U.S. There's about 12,000 from the U.S., 5,000 from the armed forces of the Philippines, and then a handful of others from different countries as well, to really just, you know, flex their military might on China. And I think what's important to note about these bases that they've just been approved to operate out of is that it's all in very close proximity to Taiwan and the West Philippine Sea, which there's currently like a territorial dispute between China and the Philippines over sovereignty. I mean, we say it's the West Philippine Sea is the Philippines, of course, and the natural resources there are ours. And I can't remember the name of the particulars, but there was a recent like international like court
decision.
Yeah, decision. Thank you. Decision that basically said, yeah, this is the Philippines territory. China needs to leave. But
good luck convincing China.
I know, right? Yeah.
This is a really interesting. I'll just break in just a second here. So, you know, I've been talking both directly and somewhat indirectly on this program for a while about, you know, just the whole issue of American empire, American projection of force, the whole geopolitical sort of realignment since the end of the Cold War, mm-hmm. the rise of China. You know, how the U.S. is still basically trapped in its archaic idea of still maintaining global dominance instead of moving towards a multipolar world. And of course, you know, the question of China is interesting in that, you know, there's no way for us to know how much they really want to live in a multipolar world. The image a lot most of us get is of this massive, aggressive economic juggernaut that is also projecting its force, as it does towards the Philippines, it does towards a lot of the other countries in its region. But, you know, how do we know what sort of different, global arrangements could actually be arrived at if we don't try, if we don't actually engage in some kind of diplomatic. So, you know, I know that both, you know, both correct me if I'm wrong, my impression is that both the, you know, the Philippine nation state, you know, in its modern form is, you know, in has issues with China because of, as I said, the nature of Chinese tendency to think that everything is in its sphere of influence in the region, but also the grassroots has a you know, what I would consider a healthy, you know, skepticism perhaps of Chinese power as well. But it's probably different from the, you know, the way the nation state is operating now. To talk a little bit about that. Does that make sense?
So you're talking about like the. Like the way China's projecting power and then the way the U.S. is projecting power and how they're kind of splitting themselves off in...
Well, Philippines is caught in the middle. Yeah. That's one of the aspects.
Right.
So you know, I guess what I'm saying, one thing that I don't, that I maybe kind of expected to hear, because, you know, the groups you all are involved with mm-hmm. are, you know, one could say are from a traditional political perspective are leftist groups, you know, have are oppositional towards capitalism, towards imperialism, and so there might be traditionally a tendency to be sympathetic historically with the Chinese being ostensibly a communist state. But I'm wondering, in past shows, I've heard from your comrades a certain not just taking the Chinese line. So I guess the question was, it seems like that both the you know, the leftist opposition resistance in the Philippines is also somewhat skeptical. I don't know, give us a little, can you suss that out for us a little bit?
I think in our particular context, there's a lot of like different examples within the Philippines of the Chinese actually flexing, you know, its imperialist nature.
Because that goes way back, before the communist revolution.
Yeah, and. I think what we see is, like, in particular, it's the military buildup in the West Philippine Sea, and the West Philippine Sea is very rich in, like, oil reserves. And then just, like, military positioning and trade position in terms of trade, because it's a very lucrative trade route, just going back even pre-colonial times, you know, that's a lot of wealth and resources pass through that part of the world. So I think, in particular, if we look at the West Philippine Sea and China trying to redefine it as still the South China Sea.
Which is how much of the world thinks of it, because the Chinese has framed it that way. Yeah,
because the Chinese has framed it that way. But you know, those are our natural resources, just to put it simply. But then there's so that's the West Philippine Sea. But then there's other examples where I wish I could remember the name of it, because it happened like a few years ago. But like there's like a whole port that's actually in the Philippines that's actually owned by the Chinese. They also own. If I remember right, I think it's the Caliwa Dam, but they have like dams and reservoirs for their own particular, you know, interests with very very similar objectives to the United States, to extract Philippine natural resources and extract the wealth out of the Philippines for themselves, and still playing a role in perpetuating the current conditions that you know, force so many people to migrate, or force so many farmers to be landless. Yeah. So really, in the case of China and then also with the U.S., it's just two different countries that are really infringing on our sovereignty. And we are getting kind of, well, not kind of, we're getting caught in the middle of that issue with that inter-imperialist rivalry between the U.S. and China. You know, because China also has, you know, says Taiwan is part of China. And the U.S. has, you know, military and economic interests and is a longtime partner with Taiwan. And so it makes a lot of sense that with the buildup of the military bases and then Marcos' visit to D.C., that actually, you know, that they're, it's just further putting, it's just making it more clear that the U.S., the Philippines is getting caught in between these two imperialist powers over, you know, territorial claim and economic interests within the Indo-Pacific.
And it's just going to get, it's just going to get more and more. I mean, this, like I said, the U.S. shows no signs of giving up its own pretensions at global hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese have won their position through a really massive concerted effort at, you know, economic development, and, you know, in, let's face it, you know, against U.S. global hegemony. I mean, there's reasons why radical leftist groups have sided with China in the past, because you know, China was, you know, was a country that was bucking the global capitalist system, and so, you know, that was always, you know, leftists have always looked at examples of countries that have successfully bucked the global capitalist system, and I personally think that that's a good thing. I also personally think that China has kind of has adopted some of the same mistakes, you know, of overdoing the economic productivism, mm-hmm. and also of projecting its own, as you said, basically, you know, I see it somewhat as like the old Soviet Union, that they both had their own historical imperial thrusts that their communist leadership never really fully renounced. In fact, kind of, you know, opportunistically used and maintained, it seems like. That's my feeling. But anyway, you can respond to that. But here we are in the belly of the United States imperial beast. And so I always try to focus on what we can do here. And here you all have, your families have, for whatever reasons, detached yourselves from your roots in your homeland in the Philippines and come to the belly of the beast, and are have joined in to solidarity organizations that are fighting the U.S. imperial interest, because since what's about 125 years, there's been this massive U.S. influence on the Philippines. And, you know, there was a period where the Philippines closed down the military bases, and now it seems everything's going in the opposite direction again. So I know that was a little bit of a long-winded personal statement here, but so now what's you know, I'm looking at this article, and we've got this is in the Al Jazeera, and they quote Renato Reyes Jr., Secretary General of the New Patriotic Alliance, which is the English name for the long Philippine name, which is shortened to Bayan, and talking about how the leaders, the U.S. and Philippine leaders, were expected to announce new bilateral guidelines on the presence of the U.S. military in the Philippines, quote, as if we are a protectorate of America in clear violation of our national sovereignty and constitution, which goes along lines of what you all were talking about, selling out the Philippines. So talk about what has been decided thus far? What have these discussions been all about between Marcos and Biden?
Yeah, with Marcos and Biden, really it's firming up IPEF through APEC. I just threw a bunch of acronyms at y'all, but I'll break that down for you. So in particular, the sellout and that push through charter change of the Philippine Constitution to open up the Philippines to more foreign investment is being done through this thing called the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. And it's basically economic framework with, I think it's like 13 different countries in Southeast Asia and Oceania that really, if you were to break it down and look at it, it's just, you know, they talk about things like, what do you call it? They have their three pillars. If I could pull that up real quick. But it's basically, trade and investment liberalization, business facilitation, economic and technical cooperation. So really a perpetuation of an expansion of like neoliberalism within the Indo-Pacific region. So, you know, just trying to make it get rid of like regulations, tariffs, make it cheaper to move capital and commodities across as I said before, going back to like the wealth that's extracted from the Philippines, some of these other countries too, like Indonesia, Malaysia, and a lot of these countries that we would classify as like Global South, third world countries, or underdeveloped nations. This is really just the economic framework to extract more natural resources and really build up and create more profit for U.S. business interests, as well as because there was the whole trilateral agreement too with Japan and Australia as well too. To basically make these countries and the multinational corporations within these countries richer, getting rid of even more regulations when it comes to like workplace like safety standards or pay, and also just the a lot of Marcos' narrative when he first got elected and then currently, he's really pushed the whole moving more Filipino, allowing for more Filipino migrants to go overseas as a source for cheap labor. So really creating an uptick in the number of like nurses coming overseas. I recently read, there's like a push for like 5,000 more seafarers to go overseas. Filipinos make up, out of all seafarers, like the largest group of, as far as nationality is concerned, of seafarers. They make up like 1/3. And so they're trying to get even more. And it's like, Just finding ways to make these multinational corporations, U.S. and Japan and Australia, richer, and they're all trying to do it through this thing called through APEC, which is Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation. And that they're having meetings here in the U.S. But they have one in August in Seattle, and then they have one in November in San Francisco to really, bring about these like new neoliberal changes to the Indo-Pacific, and also like militarily as well to really have these different member countries, especially under the IPEF framework and economic agreement, align themselves military and economically like very clearly with the U.S. in opposition to China.
So not that I want you to tip your hand. Do your groups, organizations typically have a presence outside some of these big gatherings?
Yeah, I mean,
Mac, you want to weigh in or?
Yeah, I can start off a little bit in terms of yesterday night, Marcos was at a fancy dinner with several members of the entourage that he traveled here with. And there were members of Bayan USA, particularly members of Anak Bayan, which is the youth organization that's fighting for national democracy in the Philippines and is a member organization of Bayan. There were four activists in D.C. actually who were arrested for protesting outside of the restaurant and for saying that Marcos, you know, is not welcome here. All of the narratives that he's been pushing since he set foot in this country has been so two-faced. He's been congratulating the Filipino people for being such incredible workers, for being so empathetic, and he's been really trying to sell out workers by traveling all across the world recently and telling different countries, including the U.S., like, you should have more Filipino workers. We're so reliable and so caring. And it's this, I say this is two-faced because he's really has no regard for the Filipino people. He's investing in the migration from the Philippines to other countries because it profits him and it profits the ruling elite. It does not profit the people, the fact that they have to travel long distances and be uprooted from their homes in order to simply make a living wage. It's a challenge. And the American dream narrative that he's trying to push here in the U.S. is crumbling, as the experience of Filipino migrants really tells a different story. And so that's why youth activists were out there outside of the restaurant last night. And they were arrested for raising their concerns. And we see this actually on Bayan organizers across the U.S. and in the Philippines as well. The Marcos regime has been incessantly red-tagging our organizations, which basically means that they're saying these organizations are terrorists, they're criminal, when in reality we represent the interests of the broad masses of Filipino people. And APEC, this free trade framework that Johnny had touched on, is actually going to be investing more money into anti-counterinsurgency operations in the Philippines. And so we'll see more activists, more journalists, peasant workers, farmers, and, you know, even Phil-Am activists like ourselves here in the U.S. Being really targeted for speaking out against the regime. And, yeah, do you want to add?
Oh, yeah. With that, there's this news outlet called SMNI or the Sunshine Network. what they did was because we're so against the current regime, I mean, for very clear reasons, related to the red tagging, the fact that the Philippines remains poor and the politicians in power do nothing to defend our sovereignty or address the issues of poverty within the Philippines. You know, they've even started to attack the overseas chapters as well, including our own. So the whole point, the whole reason why I brought up the Sunshine Network is that they branded us as the largest criminal syndicate in the U.S. And all
who,
we do
who has
the Sunshine Network.
And what are they?
They're a news outlet in the Philippines. They're funded. It's run by what's his name? Paul Kibaloy?
Yes, Apollo Kibaloy. He is a very rich Filipino business owner and also leader of a large Filipino church called the Kingdom of Jesus Christ, and he basically uses his extreme wealth as a media network owner, as well as his platform as a church leader, to sway public opinion against pro-people organizations like Bayan Philippines and Bayan USA. And particularly, he is actually like friends with the Dutertes and with the Marcoses. And so he is really colluding with them and using his power and resources to sway public opinion. He's also wanted by the FBI. So this is a serious criminal. He has used his platform as a church leader to run an incredibly large sex trafficking scheme of women and children, Filipino women and children, to the U.S. And so, yeah, that's like a very strong example that we like to use to really highlight the links to which the Marcos Duterte regime will protect criminals, will protect perpetrators of violence who represent the message that they want portrayed.
So that's ironic that they use Sunshine Network, since that's sort of used to as a word for like transparency in the media and like to protect whistleblowers and such, but they seem to be the opposite. Well, you know what you bring up, all this stuff, the red tagging, and you know, I don't know. I just think of what just happened to these members of the African People's Socialist Party, who are arrested for I don't know. Maybe it'll turn out that they really were deeply embedded with these Russians who were criminals. It seems very far-fetched to me. It seems almost like, you know, they almost had to do something to sort of counterbalance, you know, this massive all the criminal cases being brought against the January 6th, who are just about all white. So they had to sort of counterbalance it with some African people. But just the fact that the Department of Justice is going after, and it's not the first time, you know, I just wonder, you know, I'm a little, it makes me a little worried, you know, the idea that the Biden administration is, you know, protector of human rights, yet they are going after these. I hope you all don't get targeted. You know, it's you know, the stakes are so high, the way the United States is refusing to change its you know, aggressive imperialistic legacy of the United States. They're just trapped on this course, total collision course with China, and so it seems like the only option they seem to have is meeting with the son of a former dictator, and you know, things like that. And I just hope they don't start, you know, you all aren't targeted here in the United States. I guess there wasn't really a question in there.
Yeah, but I mean, I will emphasize that all the organizations that we're part of, so Bayan USA as an alliance, and then even individual members of our member organizations here in Portland have already been targeted. And in fact, Filipino activists are targeted every day. And so it is really...
I mean, by the United States itself.
Oh, so. Absolutely. Yeah.
More explicitly by the Philippine government. Right. And it's been done through not necessarily new thing, but it's something that was really formulated under Duterte. It's called the National Task Force to End Local Communist Armed Conflict, or NTF-LCAC. And basically, it's the way they go about doing their thing is they basically brand anyone who criticizes the government as being communist or a communist or a front for the Communist Party of the Philippines. And so that's led to a lot of people getting murdered, a lot of people getting arrested, tortured, killed, and the red tagging of pretty much every Bayan organization. So like here in the U.S., they through the NTF-LCAC, which also has connections to the Sunshine Media Network, that they red tagged all of our organizations, especially along the West Coast, and I'm pretty sure even just throughout the whole country. So, yeah, the Bayan USA chapter has just been red tagged in general. And so, yeah, but I mean, but we haven't done anything wrong. The only thing we've done is just raise our criticisms about the government. It's like, why do you continue to let the Philippines stay poor? Why do you continue to sell out the Philippines to the U.S. and these different multinational corporations? Why don't you actually, instead of investing all that money into cracking down on people who are just, who want to see a better Philippines and have the needs of the people addressed, instead of investing in people that are trying to crack down on that, why not invest it in the people? Why not actually create the jobs people need so they don't have to leave the Philippines?
So I realized I hadn't reintroduced you since the very beginning. So the voice you just heard was Johnny, who's with the group Migrante Portland. And the other voice you've heard is Mac Durias with Gabriela Portland. Those are two organizations involved in supporting Philippine Americans in the United States and opposing the United States policies, which continue to facilitate the impoverishment of the Philippine people and the projection of United States power, and is entering a whole new phase with building up the U.S. military presence once again in the Philippines. And the reason we're talking about this is because relatively recently elected President Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the long-time dictator, is in the United States speaking with the Biden administration. We only have about 10 minutes left to go. I neglected to mention that KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio does have a Facebook page. And if I had said that at the outset, you might have been able to like me and then pose your question or comment on Facebook. You can still do that now if you wish. I apologize, I haven't been able to take calls just because I am board operating and hosting the program, which makes it very awkward to take phone calls. And since I hardly, I don't board operate for talk shows, I am just keeping it together the best I can. So, all that said, we have a few minutes left, and I just want to give you the opportunity to let people know how they might get involved. I know you've got a teach-in coming up on May 12th. I know the Bayan Center at 1537 Southeast Morrison opened up a few months ago, and they do some events. Talk about maybe some events and whether how people can get involved in the work you do.
Yeah, and just to clarify, that community center on Morrison that you mentioned is called the Filipino Bayanihan Center, and it's not actually affiliated with any Bayan organizations. However,
Sorry, I got that confused.
Oh, that's okay. However, we do partner with them on various campaigns, particularly the Gabriela Portland Care for Caregivers campaign, as a community center that is building a community-based health program. They are involved in that campaign, and so yes, we love the work that they do, and yeah. Separate organizations, just so y'all know. Just sort of to round out this conversation that we've had around red tagging of activists and the way that the Marcos regime is really beefing up its counterinsurgency tactics as a way to repress the voices of the Filipino people. I just want to share that Bayan USA is also looking at how the U.S. tax dollars are being directed. And we want to see for Filipino Americans here in the U.S., in the midst of an economic crisis that continues to impact the working class and poor communities here, we want to see U.S. tax dollars go towards serving people's actual needs rather than funding war and counterinsurgency abroad in the Philippines and other countries. And we want to call on listeners who may be constituents of Oregon to support the Philippine Human Rights Act as well, which is a bill that would cut U.S. security assistance to the Philippine military and their police until such a time where their role in the human rights violations that have been occurring in the Philippines is thoroughly investigated. And most
it's been languishing unintroduced for quite a long time now, right?
It has been, yeah. We are pushing it. We have been speaking to Senator Merkley, actually, about introducing it on the Senate side, and we're still having that conversation and really trying to get more organizations and individuals on board to pressure the U.S. government to really make this a priority and to not, you know, be sitting in these lavish meetings with Marcos and his cronies and enjoying the so-called prosperous ties between our countries when in reality there are activists and just innocent Filipinos being killed every day in the Philippines because of this oppressive regime that the U.S. is supporting financially. And finally, we want to call on any Filipinos and supporters who are listening to build the mass movement with us. And we want to really junk any and all unequal U.S.-Philippine military agreements, including the ones, the guidance that Biden and Marcos firmed up in their recent meeting. We want to stop military aid and war games that are really detrimental to Filipinos abroad. And I'll pass it to Johnny for those teach-ins that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, yeah. So for the a few things, Mac brought up the four activists that were arrested at the, I think it was at the action last night, right? Yeah, it was at the action last night. And so if you could donate to the People's Legal Defense Fund, it's at bit.ly. /no Marcos visit. And then tonight we will have a teach-in talking more about Bayan's analysis on the deals between Biden and Marcos. Right now we're kind of scratching the surface on what happened, but there'll be more particulars shared through that teach-in, and you can find it at tinyurl.com/May3teach-in. And then locally, we will have a teach-in on EDCA and the military arrangements between the U.S. and the Philippines on May 12th. Date, time, and location still to be decided, but check out Bayan Organ's Instagram page if you want to check that out and come through. And yeah, so if you want to learn about more activities that we're doing, you can email us at bayanorgan@gmail. So bayanorgan@gmail. And then, yeah, if you want to learn more about APEC and IPEF and that new economic rearranging of the Indo-Pacific and what that means for all of us globally, here in the U.S., but also for workers and farmers and peasants and all oppressed and exploited people in Southeast Asia and Oceania, check out PNW People Over Profit Coalition. We do a whole bunch of educational series on APEC and IPEF. And if you, it'd be good to find out more about that. You can check that out at bit.ly/PNW-POP.
So what is this People Over Profit Coalition? Is that an active organization? Yeah.
It's more like, it's a coalition of different organizations and individuals that see the problems and the neoliberal schemes attached to the APEC and IPEF military and economic agreements happening right now. And so Marcos is also coming to visit to solidify that deal between the U.S. and the Philippines and with other member organizations within APEC in November in San Francisco. And so we're really just spreading the word about it, trying to do some political educational discussions and raise more awareness around it. And if people wanna, we're trying to rally in August up in Seattle and then rally down in November in San Francisco. So if you want to join us and be part of that, check us out.
Okay. So there's opportunities to get involved, and I'm always so interested in the development of like wider anti-imperialist coalitions, and I guess I don't really have time to get into, you know, some of the other stronger organizations that are supporting your work. And again, you can go to the contacts that Johnny and Mac brought up, but also at my program page, I think some of those are listed as well at kboo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. I think we are just about out of time. Thank you for coming in, Johnny and Mac. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. And we'll go out with a little more of Carry on the Fight by Bootleg Orchestra before your next program comes up here on KBOO.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian. You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
Then go insane. And eventually...
That's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.